Welcome to episode 64. I'm Stuart McCullough. I'm the CEO of VHAA. And starting with this week's industrial roundup, and in particular with community health, which continues to make its way through an intense year of bargaining. We have time set aside this week to catch up with the MSAV to discuss the bargaining proposal. The MSAV is the union that covers dietitians, pharmacists, and psychologists, as well as audiologists. And we look forward to giving your feedback to them. We also have time set aside to catch up with the HWU with regards to health and allied managers and administrative workers' feedback. Thank you to all those community health members that have provided feedback to date. This week we don't have further time scheduled with the Fair Work Commission, but we do have two other sessions with the Fair Work Commission to continue our allied health bargaining. With respect to our health service members, we have a medical scientist's SDP PWG scheduled for Monday, a meeting with Professionals Australia on Tuesday to give feedback with regards to the proposed model for dentists. On Friday, there is a scheduled SDP PWG for Health and Allied, as well as further bargaining for biomedical engineers. There's a meeting of our Member Engagement Committee on Thursday. The Member Engagement Committee is a subcommittee of the board, and we anticipate that it will be calling for volunteers to join it as it oversees work in terms of improvements to our service offerings. As always, all of our activities are summarised through the VHA Community app. And that's it for this week's Industrial Roundup.
It's been a long time since I've seen a sun.
Welcome to the weekly update, where we go in depth with a particular subject. And joining me for this week's discussion is the manager of Workplace Relations Services and the inventor of Activite, Tim Nagel. Welcome, Tim.
Thanks, sure. Good to be here.
Tim, would you be good enough to reveal the clue for today's discussion?
Sure.
So there are two elements to this clue for the benefit of those who are listening to this podcast rather than watching. Could you describe the objects? And for the benefit of those who are watching, could you hold the objects up?
So I see a iPod.
I think that is a classic iPod.
Classic iPod. And I also got a piece of paper that shows a racing car driver.
And do you know in particular which racing car driver that is?
Not particularly.
Okay, so that racing car driver is Ayrton Senna. So this particular iPod has been tuned to a particular band. So first of all, I'll give you an audio clue. Any idea? Any closer?
No.
Let's try that again.
Silent Night.
Tim, you couldn't be more wrong. Those are the delicate soft rock sounds of REO Speedwagon. So if you combine Ayrton Senna with REO Speedwagon, that will tell you the subject for today's discussion.
Fast cars.
Tim, you couldn't be more wrong. What today's clues clearly spell out is our subject for discussion, which is Ayrton Scenario Speedwagon. Today we're talking about long service leave scenarios. So Tim, a while ago we did a podcast with regards to long service leave scenarios, particularly with respect to the Nurses and Midwives Agreement, and this is a follow-up to that previous podcast.
Yeah, so I mean we've been getting lots of feedback from members about this clause. As you recall, we completed an implementation guide in February and also a podcast. So this is a follow-up to those activities.
So for those people who are listening and watching to this, that episode was episode 52. The clause that we're working through today in particular is clause 70 of the Nurses and Midwives Agreement. So just a reminder to our members, what were the key principles applying to long service leave provisions under the Nurses and Midwives Agreement?
So the key principles are firstly that there's no change to the enrolled nurses, so that's important. And the second key principle is that the mode of employment at the time of taking long service leave is really important in determining what the rules are.
So in terms of determining what the rules are, we're talking about whether or not it's in accordance with the Nurses and Midwives Agreement or whether it's in accordance with the Long Service Leave Act.
That's right.
So since that time, we've had a lot of discussions with members. How is it that we've obtained feedback?
Yeah, so we've really tried to engage with the membership through a different number of different avenues. So we've placed long service leave entitlement on the Metropolitan and also the Regional and Rural HRIR group agenda and obtained feedback through that forum. We've also, we undertook our regional forums in March. So across the five regions and got feedback through those forums. We've established a payroll reference group and had a number of meetings where the long service leave was a focus of discussion, so we got a lot of feedback through that as well. And finally, we've got an overarching reference group where we've talked about our long service leave in detail.
I'll just mention in terms of the payroll reference group that it's a small group at the moment which we'll be looking to expand out to involve more people before too long. So I take it, in terms of that feedback, were there any key themes or any things you'd like to summarise for that feedback?
Yeah, look, one of the key components was the need to develop some practical scenarios that people could use to guide the operation of the clause within their health service.
All right, so that's how we get to practical scenarios, Speedwagon.
That's right.
Okay, and how have those scenarios been developed?
We received a spreadsheet with a baseline set of scenarios, and Serge from Barwon is the one that supplied that along with the payroll team down there. So we've used that as the base and build upon that.
Okay, terrific. And those scenarios will ultimately be settled and distributed to members?
Yeah, that's right. So we've undertaken a process of consultation with the union, the department as well, to seeking advice as required to be able to answer all those scenarios.
So once those scenarios are distributed, that will be a handy guide for people who are looking to apply their particular factual circumstance.
Yeah, and it will build upon the implementation guide. So what we'll do is we'll release a second version of that with the scenarios included.
All right, so let's move to the first scenario, and that's going to come up on screen. We have here some service, let's say it's with a registered nurse, is that right, Tim?
Yeah, so these are all scenarios that will relate to registered nurse, registered midwife, not enrolled nurses.
Because the rules for enrolled nurses are unchanged.
Correct.
So, scenario one, we have employer A, we have some full-time service from between the years 2000 and 2004, casual service from 2005 to 2009. They then leave employer A and go to employer B and begin as a part-time employee from 2009 to 2018, upon which point the employment terminates through resignation. So the question is the employee entitled to a payment when they transfer to employer B in 2009?
And so the answer there is no. So the State Act didn't apply at that time. So it wasn't enlivened, so that therefore there was no entitlement to be paid under the State Long Service Leave Act.
Okay, now because we're talking about a point in time that it wasn't active at that point in time, so not active at 2009 where that employment ends, when was it active from?
So 29th of June 2012 is when the successor agreement, so we've talked about this in the past, with the introduction of the Fair Work Act, that it had a provision in there about preserving pre-modern award long service leave entitlements until the time a successor agreement came in. So for nurses, that was the 29th of June 2012.
Okay, so 29th of June 2012 is a critical date if people are looking at a history, an employment history, in terms of whether or not the Long Service Leave Act has any work to do for a casual RN.
And that's different to saying whether the entitlement goes backwards, because we know from our previous podcast that there is no limit to how far back the entitlement goes. This is where it's enlivened, though, which is a separate date.
Okay, so under that scenario, there is no entitlement to payment upon moving from employer A to employer B for that reason.
That's right.
What about when the employee resigns in 2018?
So there is an entitlement at that point, and how that's calculated is that it is 19 years worth of mixed service. So the agreement applies, and the agreement recognises both the casual and the permanent service across both employers.
Okay, so the critical thing here is that there's recognition across both employers. It recognises both kinds of service, that is permanent as well as casual, and the mixed service clause of the nurses and midwives clause agreement applies, which provides for a different rate of accrual depending on the kind of service. And the critical thing is at the point of termination that they've been a permanent employee rather than a casual employee, which is why the agreement rather than the act applies.
That's right. And it assumes that they've got continuous service, but the agreement applies. The agreement provides the mixed service across both modes of employment.
All right, so we'll come back to continuous service in just a moment. Let's move on to scenario two. So here we are. We have scenario two on the screen. With employer A, we have full-time service between 2000 to 2004, casual service from 2005 to 2009, and then a move to employer B, part-time service from 2009 to 16, and then casual service between 2016 and 2018, and a resignation. So within that scenario, we have a few critical dates to consider where certain events have occurred. So the first of those occurs in 2009. Is the employee entitled to a payment when they leave employer A and go to employer B in 2009?
Yeah, so the answer is no. It's the same as the first scenario. So at that time, the State Long Service Leave Act wasn't enlivened for this group of employees.
So this is because that critical event occurs before the 29th of June 2012.
That's right.
The answer would be different if it was after that critical date. So in terms of the next question, it's is the employee entitled to a payment when they transfer from permanent to casual employment in 2016?
So the answer here is yes. And this has been a little bit of a development in terms of the interpretation of the 70.5B and the interaction that it has with 70.8A. So that's the payment on termination after 10 years. So at the point that they've gone from part-time to casual, it's a resignation, so the employment terminates, and because they've completed greater than 15 years, then the long service leave entitlement is paid out.
And indeed greater than 10 years.
Yes, that's right.
So just in terms of that, that assumes continuity of service throughout that entire period. What does continuity of service mean?
So this is under the agreement. So the agreement contains provisions about what breaks service, what doesn't break service, but what doesn't count towards service. So it's the application of the agreement clause that determines what continuous service is.
Mm. And just in terms of that, the most obvious example as to that is the allowable period of absence between employers.
Yes.
Which is
5 weeks plus their annual leave.
Okay. And the next question under that scenario is the employee entitled to a payment when they resign their casual employment in 2018?
Yes, so they would be. So again, assuming continuity of employment, the employee would be paid out the 2 years of casual service under Section 57 of the Act because continuous employment under the Act has been greater than 7 years.
Well, let's move on to scenario three. So scenario three, which is now up on the screen, we have employer A with full-time employment for the registered nurse from 2000 to 2004, a period of casual service from 2005 to 2008, before more full-time service from 2008 to 2016. The employment with employer A ends and they go to employer B, and there is casual service from 2016 through to 2018, at which point the employee resigns. So the first question there is the employee entitled to a payment when they transfer to employer B in 2016?
So the answer is yes. So again, assuming continuity of service, they would receive 16 years of mixed service. So at 2016, the agreement applies. The agreement enables mixed service to be recognised, and it's paid at the different rates, but it's 16 years in quantum.
So the critical thing there is at that point in time, the person is a permanent employee, so the rules under the agreement for mixed service apply.
Yes.
And could the employee at that point defer payment when they move to employer B?
So no, they couldn't, because it's over 15 years under the agreement. So again, the agreement applies because they were full-time at the time. and the agreement provisions don't enable the transfer of service after 15 years.
That'll allow for the non-payment of that entitlement. So,
correct.
That the payment must be paid if it's more than 15 years.
Yes, notwithstanding the service can be recognised.
Terrific. And is the employee entitled to a payment when they resign from their casual employment with employer B in 2018?
So the answer here is that the State Act applies. The State Act doesn't recognise prior employment with another employer, so they've only got 2 years of service, which is under the threshold of 7 years, so they wouldn't receive any payment.
So key event is resignation. At the time of the key event, the person was casual. Because they were casual, the State Long Service Leave Act applies. So Tim, we've done three scenarios so far. I can't help but notice that a lot of people are leaving their employment in 2018. I'm not sure if it's something that you said, but let's move on to scenario four. So scenario four, which is now up on screen, we have employer A. We have casual service from 2000 to 2006, part-time service from 2006 to 2008. We then have a change in employers to employer B and part-time service from 2009 to 2018 and another resignation. Tim, don't take that personally. In terms of the first question that arises from that, is the employee entitled to a payment when they transfer to employer B in 2008?
So at that point, the agreement provisions apply.
Because they're a permanent employee.
That's right. The agreement provisions say that they only get a long service leave payment once they've completed 10 years of continuous service. So they haven't completed that, so they wouldn't get a payment.
Now, having said that, when they do transfer, subject to the allowable period of absence, they take their service with them.
That's right.
Okay, so the next question, is the employee entitled to a payment when they resign from their part-time employment with the employer B in 2018, notwithstanding that I just gave away the answer?
So because they're part-time, the agreement applies. The agreement recognises the service across both employers, assuming continuity of service. So the employee in this circumstance would have 19 years, which would be paid out on application.
And so effectively that is upon termination that gets paid out, and the casual service is recognised, the mixed service clause applies to the calculation.
That's right, yes, exactly.
Let's move to scenario five. That's now on the screen. We have employer A, we have part-time service from 2000 to 2008, we then have a change of employers to employer B, and casual service from 2009 to 2011, part-time employment from 2011 to 2016, and then another period of casual employment from 2016 to 2018, at which point the person resigns. That's a very complicated history, Tim. So the first question, is the employee entitled to a payment when they transfer to employer B in 2008?
So like the previous scenario, the person is part-time, so the agreement applies. Under the agreement, you need to have completed 10 years to be paid out your long service leave entitlement, and so they haven't reached that threshold yet, so no payment would be made.
So this is an interesting one, in that they've gone to the next employer and become casual. So the next question is the employee entitled to a payment when they transfer to casual employment in 2016? That's the second lot of casual employment with the one employer.
That's right, and this is part of the nuances of the interaction between the two, because at the time they start with employer B as a casual, the Long Service Leave Act applies, so that previous service with employer A wouldn't be counted. They would then go part-time in 2011. That means that the agreement applies. And when they terminate their employment to go casual in 2016, 70.8 of the agreement says that they're paid out at that point.
Okay, so that's an interesting one, in the sense that we have a key event, which is a termination of employment from part-time to change modes to casual, and that means there is a need to consider the effect of the long service leave at that point in time.
That's right.
So the next question is the employee entitled to a payment when they resign from their casual employment in 2018?
Yeah, so in 2018, their mode of employment is casual, so the Act applies. And what that says is, assuming continuity of employment, they're paid out 2 years casual service under Section 57 of that Act.
So effectively, they've got more than 7 years service or employment with employer B. They're casual at the time of the key event, which means it's the act that applies, but they've already been paid for a proportion of that service, so they don't get that again.
No, it's only from 2016 to 2018 that they received that payment.
Okay, so it's at this point that I realise that if we move to, I think it's scenario 7, from scenario 5 to scenario 7, we're not too worried about scenario 6 at this point in time?
We're still looking for scenario 6. Okay. We'll find it eventually.
Their break in service has been to travel overseas, obviously.
That's right.
So for scenario 7, we have employer A with part-time service from 2000 to 2004, casual service from 2005 to 2008, full-time service from 2009 to 2016, and casual service again from 2016 to 2018, and yet another resignation. If that sounds complex, it's not as unusual as people may think.
No.
Life intervenes and people do make these kinds of choices, and that's understandable. So the first question, is the employee entitled to a payment when they transfer to casual employment in 2016?
Yes, so in 2016, they're full-time, so the agreement applies. And what that says is that if they've completed greater than 15 years, then 70.8 says they're required to be paid out at termination.
And just to sort of complete that, there is no payment upon conversion from casual to full-time in 2008 because at that point the Act had no work to do because it's before the 29th of June 2012?
That's right.
And the next question is the employee entitled to a payment when they resign from their casual employment in 2018?
Yeah, so the answer here is, and we've seen this scenario in one of the previous scenarios, is that they, assuming continuity of employment, they would be paid out the 2 years of casual service under Section 57 of the Act because their period of continuous employment with that employer is greater than 7 years.
All right, let's get another scenario up on screen. Scenario 8. Employer A, there's part-time employment from 2000 to 2009. And then casual employment from 2010 to 2018 and a resignation. Is the employee entitled to a payment when they resign from part-time employment at the end of 2009?
Yeah, so assuming that between 2000 and 2010, it's or the end of 2009, it's 10 years, they would receive a payment as the agreement applied and they'd reach the 10-year threshold.
So it's contingent on that. We haven't been specific in terms of which days within the year. If it's less than 10 years, the answer is no. If it's 10 years or more, the answer
Great.
Would be yes. Is the employee entitled to a payment when they resign from their casual employment in 2018?
So yes, they would be. Assuming continuity of employment, they would be paid out that additional 9 years of casual service under Section 57 of the Long Service Leave Act because they've had the necessary continuity of employment.
Continuity of employment, excellent. So scenario 9, let's pop that one up on the screen. Here we have employer A. Now, there is service with employer A as a casual from 2000 to 2005. There is service then with employer B as a casual, first of all, from 2006 to 2008, part-time from 2008 to 2016, casual from 2016 to 2018, and yet another resignation. I'm beginning to become concerned. Is the employee entitled to a payment when they transfer to employer B in 2005?
So because they're casual at the time, the Long Service Leave Act applies, and you need to have done 7 years of continuous employment under the Act to receive a benefit, and they haven't reached that point yet, so they would not receive a benefit in 2005.
Now, I might disagree with you there. In terms of that circumstance in 2005, because it's before the 29th of June 2012, does that mean that the Long Service Leave Act had no work to do for that casual employee?
Yes, that's another way to come at the same answer, yes.
That's not a concession, that you're correct?
No, you're correct. Because that was prior to 2012, the Long Service Leave Act didn't have any work to do at that time.
If that was after the 29th of June 2012, the answer would still be no, but that would be because they hadn't reached.
That's
the same.
Right. Okay. Yes, very correct.
Is the employee entitled to a payment when they transfer to part-time employment in 2008?
They're casual at the time, so the Long Service Leave Act applies. But they've only done 3 years because the prior the prior service with the previous employer doesn't count under the Long Service Leave Act, so they're short of the necessary threshold to be paid.
But again, the Long Service Leave Act has no work to do because of when that act occurred, because it was pre-29 June 2012, so they're short in every respect.
They are short, yeah.
So the next question under Scenario 9 is the employee entitled to a payment when they transfer to casual employment in 2016?
So in this situation, the agreement applies because they're part-time at that time. And they have greater than 15 years of service, so it's paid out on termination in accordance with 70.8.
Okay. Final question, Tim, under Scenario 9, is the employee entitled to a payment when they resign from their casual employment in 2018, and if so, can we get them to change their mind?
Well, a good retention strategy may be needed by this point.
Indeed.
But in terms of their entitlement, in 2018, they're casual, so the Act applies. They have completed more than 7 years of continuous employment, so they've got an entitlement, but they've received the vast majority of that for 2016. So they're entitled to 2 years in accordance with Section 57 of the Act.
So, Tim, thank you very much for taking us through those scenarios. We've got more scenarios to come, but we might leave those for another podcast. Ultimately, these scenarios will be issued to members, as I understand, as part of a bulletin.
Yeah, so reissuing the implementation guide with additional scenarios.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. I think there's no other way to finish this podcast than to let REO Speedwagon take us out.